Blog Talk Radio. Well, good evening and welcome once again to Madame Perry Salon, the podcast that loves you. I used to say the one with more celebrities than the inauguration. Heck, this I think still has more celebrities than even the most recent inauguration. But that's because here in my cultural salon, my little genie bottle in cyberspace, somehow the magic works, and I get the most fantastic people on here, as you probably know. Oh, and yes, and if you're new, I am Madame Perry, your spiritual advisor, your groove mistress, and your love counselor. Wait, let's strike that one. I don't want to hear too many stories. Let's leave that alone. Let's leave it where it was. And future ukulele player. So, let's see, what has happened recently? Oh, and you don't have to call me Madam. You can call me Jen, Jennifer, JP. It's all good. Or Perry. Let's see, recently we had Park Overoff. You might remember from the 80s show, Empty Nest. She was on recently. She's an activist now as well as an actor, and she was absolutely hilarious. Also, you may have noticed Grammy Award-winning saxophonist Dave Koz. You know, he was on here a couple of months ago, and now he's back out on tour again, and we are so thrilled, and I'm so looking forward to seeing him in Atlanta if he gets this way. And who else? Oh, David Fischoff. He's the guy that aided, came up with the idea of the Ringo Starr's All-Star Band, as well as the Fantasy Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp. And he's doing this again. Everybody's out there playing. I think there's Don Feldman, Nita Strauss, who plays guitar for Alice Cooper, and Lita Ford, who was on the show a couple of years ago. Lots of people. And I don't know, but when David Fischoff was here on the show, he did say that if you sign up for Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp, or I think Roger Daltrey's back in there too, soon. But if you sign up for Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp and say that Madame Perry sent you, he'll have a guitar waiting for you as a gift when you get there. Isn't that nice? So, yeah, a lot of the guests are very very generous like that with some gifts. Also, Franny Goldie, the magic pants that Adam Glassman talks about in Oprah, she still gives a discount if you mention MPS for your coupon code at the end and on those things. So that is fabulous. Yes, the same Franny Goldie that wrote Stick With You for the Pussycat Dolls and Night Shift for the Commodores and on and on and on, all kinds of songs. But anyway, okay, if you listen to this show, if you are not brand new, you am a fan of steampunk. No, wait a minute, that's not true. I freaking love steampunk. And, you know, I've got to credit James Breen of Wild Wild West Con of bringing me into the world, the life of steampunk out at Wild West Con in Arizona. And ever since then, I'm a believer. James Breen, James Spring, everybody. And in fact, one of my recent guests, I think it's been a year and a half because it was before the last the last time we were actually at Wild West, which was 2020. Yes, how can I forget? We went to Wild West Con in the little western village that is called Old Town Tucson, where a lot of TV shows and films were made. And there we are in all of our costumery in this little Wild West town, and we're all having a ball. Then we all leave for the weekend. We all leave on Sunday, turn our clocks forward an hour, and that's when everyone entered the Twilight Zone. Even the band, which was Poison Garden, a steampunk band from Italy, when they got back home to Italy, everybody was sequestered. Only one person allowed out of the home at a time to get for essential needs. So anyway, but it's going to be back next year. And it was Wheeler Stone or Doc Stone who makes some fantastic things of leather. He was a previous guest, and he's the one that referred tonight's guest to me, and I am absolutely thrilled. So there's a new film in town. You've seen me post the trailer. It's called Secret Within the Sphere. It's a sci-fi steampunk action-adventure film. Tonight I have the writer and director, David Noble, of Noble Park Productions. David, get comfortable. Get on a big cushion here in the genie bottle. Sit down and say hello.
Yeah, this is great. This is great. I will tell you that this is the first. I've never been in a cyberspace genie bottle before, but thank you. Thank you. I get to do something new every day.
I had a feeling that you would settle right in with it. So just get a – is you're that kind of guy.
It's a lot more comfortable than it sounds.
Well, sure, because it's magic. It expands or contracts to meet its needs, I'm told. And so congratulations. Your new film, Secret Within the Sphere, even though it's not out for public distribution yet, you've been hitting the film festivals. It had screenings, and it's racking up awards and accolades everywhere. Tell us about that and how it feels.
So it feels great. Probably not as great as it feels sitting in this genie bottle. I will tell you, the cup holders are a nice addition to the whole genie bottle. That's great. But neither here nor there. For Secret Within the Sphere, which is our newest venture into feature films, this has been 3 years in the making, and it's our first sci-fi, let alone steampunk adventure. And we completed the project about 4 months ago and immediately started pushing it through the film festival circuit. And so far, we've received 13 official selections, honorable mentions, semifinalists, finalists for the different categories. And we've won in 4 different festivals for best feature or best science fiction. And so, and there's still plenty more submissions.
That is fantastic. And, you know, the thing is, that is what, you know, all the hard work and the planning and putting your heart and your love and your time and sometimes your money into these things, you know, that's got to be the biggest payoff of all, is that other people recognize your vision and what you're trying to do and love it, embrace it, it speaks to them.
It is wonderful to receive the accolades, but I would tell you it's equally enjoyable to come up with a creative concept and have the ability, have the resources, have a network of friends, cast and crew that help you realize your vision. And so this was a story that we wanted to tell, and this was a story that was, I would say, 9 years in the making. And thanks to everyone in Pennsylvania and Maryland and New Jersey and the entire central PA area really helped us realize this concept, this steampunk movie.
Well, we're lucky tonight to have some of the actors and also the director of photography involved. So before we get to them, let me just cover for people to whom this may be new. Just give us a bit on the history of Noble Park Films and how did you choose this steampunk horror film?
Oh, absolutely. So my background includes a communications degree from the University of Tampa, but my job did not allow me, because I went in a different direction, really didn't allow the creative outlet. However, about 10 years ago, I met my wife and, you know, kind of inspired the creativity, and together we started making short films. And we did that under a different named banner. So we did a few short films, and then we started doing feature films, and we did a horror movie in Louisiana. We did an action martial arts movie in Seoul, South Korea. We did a treasure hunter adventure in El Paso. And then finally, about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we decided to do science fiction and steampunk. But the genesis of doing steampunk actually went as far back as Korea, where some of our film cohorts were actually doing steampunk in Korea. And it was that was our first introduction into it. And so every time we've gone to aspire to make a steampunk project, there was a lot of people that didn't know about the genre, didn't know about what the concepts were. And so it was fun, new territory for all of us, as there was discovery learning for both the science fiction and the steampunk aspects of what we were making.
Yeah, it's a very inclusive atmosphere, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's very inclusive. It's very creative. I mean, all walks of life, whether it's jewelry or the costume design or the music or the literature, or in our case, which is very few, an actual video concept.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and I think there is so much to explore there. So maybe this won't be your, I don't know. I know you can't give out some secrets. I know all about NDAs from working in PR and working on film in Atlanta. So I know you can't tell, but maybe, just maybe, you'll have another steampunk film for us in the future. I'm not saying.
Well, you know, it's always based on how well the current project does, whether it facilitates the next one. But this movie is designed with a cliffhanger ending that does allow an opportunity for a sequel. I'm just going to leave that at that.
Okay. Okay. All right. Okay. Everybody's liking this. And by the way, if you're listening live tonight, and this is July 26, 2021, 8:12 p.m. Eastern, or GMT minus 5, whatever you call it, and you want to have a question, you can always call in. The number is 646-716-9922, which is a toll-free call in the continental U.S., according to Blog Talk Radio. But after this, it's also available in Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, wherever you listen to podcasts, to download at no charge. So if you do have a question, call the number, or if you can't get to your phone, because we've all had jobs where we need to make a call and we can't, you can always message me through Facebook to Jennifer Mott at Perry, or through Madam Perry Salon. So, all right. So how did you, before I introduce the people here, how did you pull the cast and crew together? Or is that a better question for some of them?
Well, I'll let them expound upon it, but every 2, 3, 4 years, my wife and I, we would move to a new location, and we would immediately go sightseeing, and we would look for the local film community. And so in Pennsylvania, there were two communities that we met really early. That was the Lancaster Film and TV out of Lancaster, and then there was a group called VidJam out of the state capital, Harrisburg. And between those two film community groups, we started meeting the cast and crew, and then it just become a spider web effect of networking. And so Suji, Austin, George, everyone started off with those two local film groups.
Nice. Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead now and introduce, since you see, we made room for them all here, and I hope they're on nice, comfy cushions.
Yeah, I'm going to scoot over. I'm going to scoot over. Definitely.
Right. Yeah, I didn't want to say that. And don't worry if you spill anything, it cleans up in no time here, because it's magic. We have with you, let me introduce first, Suji.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Suji.
Really comfortable.
Hey. No, good. And did you get the purple one?
Good to see you, David.
Good to hear you. See you again.
So Suji Cruz, you're actress, you play the character Duchess Adeline?
Yes.
And I think you were also involved. I see your name on the writing credits as well.
A little bit, yeah. For one of the scenes, yeah. I kind of helped out with something.
Okay, well, welcome. Excited. Also, I'd like to introduce, and actually, Suji, could you do me a favor? Just reach over to the beaded curtain and open it up so we can have George Wintle step in. Hi, George.
I'm here, just
hey,
trying to scare the pillow with
you. With your big old grin.
George Winchell, director of photography for the film?
Yes.
I always say sometimes when I have a lot of people, which isn't always, but a lot of people in the discussion, I feel like I turn into Nancy Grace. You know how she'll say somebody's name and then give all of their identifiers with them. It'd be, you know, something like, okay, George Winchell, judge, Superior Court, DeKalb County, investigator. You know, like everything has to come up again. But we're going to all know who you are now. And, of course, let me, George, if you'll open a beaded curtain, George, and let this man come in, Mr. Austin Green. Austin, welcome to Madame Perry Salon.
Howdy.
not what
I'm
you
sorry,
thought,
yeah,
I know.
Please. I didn't expect this place to be so such an attractive little circle.
So thank you. Well, I see you all cleaned up nicely. So listen, what? Okay, I want to know how the cast and crew came together and what motivated each of you to be involved in this project. And let's start with Suji.
Well, one of the things that was really cool about this project was actually that, as far as a lot of the cast, we actually all met, so the majority of us all already knew each other from an acting class in Lancaster that was taught by Brad Hawkins. So in reality, a lot of us were just sort of finishing up taking some of those classes and had been working together for about 2 years, just sort of doing these, like, audition-based kind of classes, and it was really cool that a good portion of us were actually selected to be a part of the film, because it almost kind of felt like our final exam. So it was, you know, 2 months basically in the summer where we got to have fun together and be in these really, really cool locations, just kind of bonding and making those relationships even more profound. So that was really, really cool.
Fantastic. And how did you come to be involved?
I was involved with this video festival group in Harrisburg called VidGem. And they actually have an event coming up here soon that Suji and I will be co-hosting together. And that will be actually in the Lancaster area because they kind of bounce back and forth. But originally I had met an acting teacher named Bradley Hawkins, and that's where I met Suji in his acting class, and then I came in at the right time because it wasn't long after that I got to meet everyone else, and I was lucky enough to have been invited to audition.
All right, and so let me get the other introduction now to George Winchell, director of photography.
I am here.
what brought you in? The big money, the fame. What was it that brought you in?
Actually, David bought me a beer at the meeting he was talking about for VidGem, so I'm a cheap date. But we were actually sitting at a table just chatting, and he said, "Hey, I've got this movie coming up, and would I be interested?" And I do mostly commercial, and I was really looking for an opportunity to do something in the narrative realm. And it just turned out to be a really great fit.
Nice. And director of photography, what does that mean to the layperson like me?
Technically, it means I am in charge of the visual, and I'm kind of a go-between between the director and the actor. So the director's vision for how he wants the film shot, the look, the feel. That's pretty much my job, to figure out technically how to film that from the choice of the camera, the lenses, and the lighting.
Okay. All right. So, and now, Austin, you play the character. Is it Ivo or Ivo Bell?
It's Ivo Bell, yes.
Ivo Bell, okay. And tell us about him.
Well, I was really excited
not just about the character, but as we developed, as the film had been developed, I realized that I was going to have like a little ship that my character was going to be flying. So that was what got me. I was like, man, if I have a ship, that was really what like hooked me in, you know? So, but you know, I kind of imagine my character is like a Han Solo type, but I, you know, but that might just be wishful thinking, you know, that's how I like to see myself. But yeah, so.
You got to keep the vision alive, okay? If not, what's the point? You know, so is that, so did you sort of model your acting technique or your, how you handled the script, the character, the movements of Ivo after Han Solo or?
Oh, no, I would say once we got into, a lot of times when you're, when you're preparing to act in something, you can do a bunch of preparation and then all of a sudden they'll be like, here's your outfit or here's the scenery. And then everything that you prepared all of a sudden doesn't make sense. Does that make sense? So you do still do the preparation. You just become a bit more vague about it. And then whenever you get your outfit or you see the scenery, then you get a little bit more specific. So once I had gotten outfitted for the role, that definitely informed a little bit more of how I moved and how I walked about the scenes and things like that. So I wouldn't say specifically that, but I guess from a third person perspective, that's what somebody might associate my character with to some degree.
Were you already interested or involved with steampunk at the time?
I had been to a lot of comic cons, and sometimes they will have like a section that's just completely dedicated to steampunk type stuff. So I've been familiarized with it, but I think around this area, there's not a ton of, you know, representation for that particular community. So I think it's really exciting that this, I was really excited about the idea of this film being made here as a result of that, you know, because I don't think it gets the same type of representation as it does, say, in like Southern California.
Interesting, that perspective. I wouldn't have thought that. So let me ask too. Let me go to Suji. Were you
yes.
already aware of steampunk and before
this? I was actually. So I actually briefly, before I really delved into more of the acting side of things, I did a little bit of modeling and cosplay, and through the process of doing some of that, was introduced to a lot of people, especially in the Maryland area, that do a lot of steampunk. So I had already gotten to know a lot of those people, which was really cool, because then when I helped with costume and design for the film as well, and we were looking at different things, I was able to kind of reach out to some of the people that did a lot of that in the community. And get different pieces to put together to kind of complete looks for people. So that was a really cool thing. And then, you know, in that way also get more people that are in the area that really enjoy that to either, you know, want to be extras or to want to in the film, or even just like share our posts and get them excited on social media and hopefully come to the premiere here in August, because that would be really, really cool. But yeah, I was familiar with the concept. Kind of sort of involved.
and somehow I get the feeling that maybe, just maybe, I've been wrong a time or two, that maybe George Winchell did have some steampunk knowledge or experience or familiarity.
I did. Actually, we filmed a lot of the big scenes involving the trains at Strasburg Railroad, and they're, I think, either the oldest or the second oldest steam operating railroad in the country. And I had done some commercial work for them before that, and that's when I learned about the whole steampunk world. I honestly knew nothing of it. I had kind of heard the terminology, but whenever they would have events and the whole, the trains and that era, you know, it's fascinating because if you've never been around steam engines, it's pretty impressive. It's an amazing, and I got kind of an inside look at that, but we would hear the stories about, you know, the steampunkers that would come out and they would, you know, do pictures and, you know, ride the train. And I've done a couple of photo shoots with, similar to what Suji was talking about, people who do cosplay and dress up. I can't say I was a fan of the genre, but I was aware of it. And from a visual standpoint, it's probably as close as I'm going to get to a Marvel movie. So that was a lot of fun.
Okay. So how about now? Are you any more enamored of it? Are you in the steampunk
group? I'm still fascinated with it, but to be honest with you, the fact that they're dressed up in that Victorian clothing on hot summer days, nope, I think I'm going to be a little more fan of anybody who's going to be at the beach in board shorts.
Yeah, you know, that's what I should be thinking about, because I've already reserved my rooms for next March for Wild Wild West Con in Tucson coming back, and now I'm thinking about the temperature going sky high out there.
Yep, it's not clothing that's geared for people who don't like to sweat.
Mm-mm. Yep. Maybe I have to find some little tiny portable fans going inside those big skirts or something. So that's just an idea. I don't know. So anyway, as I was saying, if you have a question, if you're listening live and have a question or a comment, the number is 646-716-9922, or you can message me on Facebook either through Madam Perry Salon or Jennifer Modette Perry, and I'll be happy to share it. And I do have a question. It's already been messaged in, but I'm going to hold it because, oh, and this is the guy that's a sci-fi writer, so you're going to like him a lot. He's going to have good questions. So if you could all give me just a minute, I've got a message on here, so you got a chance to get a glass of water. But if not, I don't have time to mute everybody. So I'm going to just play it and just, you know, don't yell at your dog or anybody, okay? It's just it's just okay. So here's just a little quick message.
I mean, the world has gone crazy, right? I mean, this whole pandemic, I don't even know if I'm coming or going anymore. You know what I mean? But the one thing during the pandemic that I found out, right, that was a good thing, was the Madam Perry Salon. I mean, this podcast, right, when you hear her laughing, all you want to do is laugh. Right? When her dog's barking in the background and she's talking to the duck, I'm like, she's going to an interview, and I'm like, this podcast is the best podcast I've ever heard before. You know what I mean?
Well, we don't have any dogs barking yet, but it's thunderstorming, so they may. Anyway, it could happen. It could happen. So anyway, well, listen, I have, I don't know if any of you are familiar with an author, Zigzag Claiborne, who in daily life is Clarence Young, but as his pen name, Zigzag Claiborne. And he was on here a few months back. One of his books that I especially love is called Afro Puffs Are the Antenna of the Universe. It is an adult sci-fi book, and it is fantastic. It's real. So Clarence, or Zigzag, has said, after the intro, he said, "You're always madam to me. Thank you, Clarence. You are. The sweetest." And he has a question for David. Was there a steampunk concept that you wanted to include but was too big for the movie? Like, and he gives some examples of giant mechanical crab, robot, eagle jet, you know.
So I will tell you that in preparation, just like any other project, I look for what would be cool for me. And then there's the moment of reality that we either can't accomplish or can't afford, and so it becomes compromised. And so I know that I wanted more people I wanted grander scenes, like ballrooms, and I wanted more fights, and I wanted more gunfights, and I wanted more air battles. I mean, it was really just a matter of more. And so in the absence of, you know, with the budget, because this is a micro independent movie, and in the absence of a larger budget, what I just did was kind of reduce it in scale. And so there is a gunfight. There is a fist fight. There are air battles. There's a lot of visual effects. There's a lot of components to this, which is all new territory for us. And there was a lot of coordination. And to say that it was small in scale is relative, because we had 150 people that during pre or production or post were involved in this project. And so 150 people to help, you know, what became this project is in a lot of ways no small feat. And so, yes, I would have loved more of what I did, but I think we hit probably the cornerstones of what would be expected for science fiction and steampunk.
Wow, yeah. This brings a question to mind. Talk about more fight scenes. Why is it that I don't want to see people fight in public in real life, whether it's just arguing or fist fights or whatever, but it's so much more exciting in a movie or TV? Why?
Yeah, I'm going to blame Jackie Chan for that one. I'm going to blame the entire Chinese martial arts community of the last 50 years. They've stained me for life. And so thank you, Jackie Chan. I'm gonna go out on a limb with that one. It's
Jackie Chan.
I think people
Chan.
Just want to see conflict. I think they want to see conflict, and I think they want to see resolution. And the appetite just grows more and more by the day. I mean, you know, like everyone would love to aspire to be a Marvel movie or a Star Wars movie or, you know, something very, very grandiose like a Lord of the Rings. But you work within your means. And so, you know, when I came to Pennsylvania, this was 2018, George, Austin, Suji, I mean, they're all positioned. They're all, you know, in the Central PA game, and I'm the new guy coming in. And the only thing I have is my word and a movie that I had on Amazon Prime. And so it was my word and my reputation. And then just the maybe a little bit of charisma, but really it was the promise to deliver. And so convincing George, Austin, Suji, convincing everyone in Pennsylvania, convincing any number of people to participate. And, you know, it ended up, you know, resulting in this. And so it's really a high level of appreciation for people, really a leap of faith with you. And in the meantime, asking, hey, thank you for coming along. Let's do a fight scene. We're going to punch you 10 times. Hey, what do you think about that?
Okay. All right. Zigzag adds movie fights are the dance scenes we never get in real life. I think he's right there. Because I think I also heard on MST 3000, underwater fights are the drum solos of movies. So.
Yeah, I will tell you, during pre-production, when you come up with the script development, you'll come up with kind of like a treatment or kind of an outline of how it's going to go. Mm-hmm. And then for me, it's always a second draft, which is the pie in the sky concept. And I was really coming up with things. Like you mentioned underwater. No kidding. I was thinking there'd be underwater components to this. But then the reality sets as you start putting on your producer's hat, and the reality helps you not compromise, but really have a realistic approach to what your vision is. And so there was underwater scenes, and there were ballroom scenes, and there was a lot of elements that were grandiose. Like we do a fight at the OK Corral scene, and I would have loved to had like a force of 30 on 30 shooting at each other. We were able to get about a dozen, and so, you know, it turned out fairly well in the end. And really appreciate, you know, all the hard work for everyone that came on.
So tell us then, what is, and David, do you want to tell or you want to have anybody add their part in? What is Secret Within the Sphere about?
Does anyone want to take that on? Or if,
come on,
you know,
somebody.
What do you guys think?
I'm still waiting to find out.
Who is that, George?
Don't mention what the actual secret is. Let's not blow the second act, you know, cliffhanger. But
I tell you what, if you guys
what do you
want
guys
to
think
know
the
a great ending, if you guys want to know a great ending, I'll tell you right now. This steampunk film. I think it's just a, you know, a good old fashioned adventure film. And I don't think people make those anymore. You don't see it like a good old happy, you know, family adventure film.
Okay, so then tell me about your character, Austin Green, and excuse me, Ivo Bell, and Duchess Adeline. Do they interact? Do they know each other? Is this
he is my chief of security. He is my chief of security, actually.
Okay.
So the funny thing about it is he was saying that he sort of thought Han Solo. And we're good enough friends that probably say that. I was going to say, we're good enough friends that he might be entertained by this. I was actually almost thinking of, if you've ever seen Spaceballs, that he was Mistress Dot, like the little robot chaperone for Princess Vespa.
I might take that. Yeah, I think. Yeah, I think I'm Joan Rivers, for sure.
You're Joan Rivers. Yeah, you're Joan Rivers.
Dot Matrix. Yeah.
Dot Matrix,
yeah. Home the desert.
Yeah.
So yeah, so we interact quite a bit. I think most of the scenes that Austin had, he had with my character. So a lot also with the lead actor. I think it was kind of evenly divided between the two of us. But yeah, he was my chief of security. So.
And the cool thing is that Suji and I just continue working together on like tons of things now. Still,
yeah.
We've been on probably like 4 different productions since Secret Wrapped. Which is really pretty amazing.
Oh, fantastic. So, well, yeah, then you guys are going to all have to come down to Atlanta for a while. You know, we're cranking back up, too.
Oh, yeah.
Tyler
Perry's turned his thing into like a whole city. He's going to get a grocery store down there and all kinds of stuff, a hotel.
There's a Tyler Perry grocery
great.
Store?
No, it's a whole village.
It's a whole village. So when you go and you do productions, so that everybody, it kind of started off, I think, because of the whole thing with the pandemic. It's to get everybody to all kind of be quarantined together and in a pod together, so that, you know, it's easier to do the productions. But yeah, it's a whole village. So you can stay there and you can work there. And
have you been there, Suji?
I haven't. I know. So I'm also a producer. So I, and I'm also a COVID compliance officer. So you often have to see what other people are doing. Unfortunately, there's no production that we have the budget for here in Central Pennsylvania where we can create our own village. So that would be lovely. And I'm sure that, you know, George is a DP and a director often would love that. As his actors would also be very thrilled. The most I can offer is, and Austin's had to take me up on this offer, is when we're doing other productions, I have a guest house. So I'm like, you guys can stay there.
I would say Suji is responsible for the largest filmmaking village in our area, for sure. Because she also has the Broken Tile production company.
Uh-huh.
So that's where we spend a lot of our time, like working on projects together and stuff. Too. So that's it's got a 2-office.
Yeah.
Space. It's really nice. So we're working
really?
On
so
our Tyler Perry
and a guest house.
City.
We're not quite at Tyler Perry, but we have an office and a guest house. That's about it.
Hey, I can dig it. That's a big deal. That's agency. That matters. No, yeah. What I was saying was, guys, was that, she's right. Tyler Perry is 300 acres or 330 acres. It's on it's part of what was Fort McPherson Army Base that he bought. But because it's so big, you know, there's like several buildings. I've only been in one building, but still to drive through there and find it. But this is going to just at a Publix grocery store and things like that, just so people have stuff nearby. So maybe he's never going to leave. I don't know. Yeah, it's lovely, actually. So that brings to mind a question for – well, oh, I know what David was talking about earlier about the budget from the question from Zigzag and things you didn't do. George, would you like to have something – what would you – in your dreams, if you were to call up your best friend from school and say, you'll never guess what I just did – what would that be? Working with underwater scenes or in the air? What would that be?
No, honestly, I mean, for me, I mean, I love the creation of something visual, you know, mostly through, you know, the lighting and choice of camera. So in all honesty, it would be a project that the artistic vision was not tied to the financial success. So that, you know, what I'm saying is that something would be with a group of people that all we could do or worry about or need to do is create something that looked the way we wanted it to, not have to worry about what it cost to do that or if it was going to make money back. Because you're always, as David said, you have to temper reality with your creative vision. And, you know, until you reach the top of this field, you don't get to tell people, well, just give me a truck of money and I will spend it the way I want and you will be happy. You know, the rest of us have to say, well, you've got a glove compartment with a couple of bills in it and make a movie.
Go by the Chick-fil-A on Sundays and then pick up all the change that dropped by the window, that kind of thing. Yeah.
And grab some footage as you go by the window because you never know. It could be a starving actress there serving you your chicken. So.
Yeah.
But yes, just something that where the creativity was not hindered by schedules, by money, by, you know, any of the limitations. So whether that was underwater or a massive fight scene, it's just a rare chance. And fortunately with this, you know, we had a lot of creativity for next to no money and time. You know, we were very fortunate to have visual locations that, you know, you didn't have to spend a fortune to make look good. As I said, the trains, we had a beautiful exterior mansion and overlooking a forest and a state park. We had a industrial complex that literally looked like it just came out of a science fiction movie. So David did an amazing job finding locations that made, you know, a low budget look like a much bigger budget.
But truth in lending, when we were operating out of central Pennsylvania, which was like the Lancaster, Carlisle, Harrisburg area, there was some driving involved. I mean, we would punch 2+ hours to the north to that industrial complex. We went 2 hours to the east to go to Philadelphia where the USS Olympia was. I mean, we were all over the map, and there was part of that schedule, like George had said, you know, part of that schedule was spent on people having to get to these far locations. And so it was just the nature of, to get those backdrops, you had to travel to those places, and they weren't all conveniently within your neighborhood. So that's where some of that time loss was definitely at, was just getting to the places to film.
Did you have any, were there any places that you weren't able to get that you wanted or had difficulty because maybe somebody just didn't want a film crew there or they wanted too much money?
So there were places where there would have been a good aesthetic, a good backdrop, but they're obviously not back lots. They're not film production lots. And so the reality is that a lot of these are businesses, and when you look at insurance and you look at the potential for whether it's injuries or fatalities, it's just not worth it for them, you know, to disrupt their business to support some random Sunday filming. And so what we did was we looked at places within the immediate area and just widened the aperture outwards. And so that's how we ended up 2 hours to the north in Lewistown, and that's how we ended up 2 hours to the east in Philadelphia proper. And it was only because you know, those were locations that were within the means and within, you know, an availability to support what we were filming there. And it wasn't from a lack of trying through networking or through the Film and PA website. It was a combination of willingness and budget and distance and any number of factors. And that's where the production comes in, is you still have to compromise, you know, fiscally while still trying to achieve as much creative as possible.
Okay, so you never felt the need to resort to doing as Steve Martin's character did in the movie Bowfinger?
I don't think so.
Have you seen that film?
I think it all turned out fine in the end.
I mean, you do know the film.
Yeah, Bowfinger, yes.
Yeah, okay. So that was good. Okay, that's good. Now, I'm still trying to pull a little story out of you guys. Suzy, Adeline.
Yes.
How about this? What is she the Duchess of?
So she is the Duchess of Wallachia, which is the town that we live in. And she's sort of, I'm trying to think of the best way to say it without giving anything away, or too much away. Basically, she is very similar to how, like, Princess Leia sort of sends a message out in order to get help, in order to sort of save her planet, kind of. It's a very similar kind of call to action. I've been sort of stalking, I guess, like someone that would be a good criminal to kind of help me and has like a particular set of skills that could help me achieve a goal I have. And Ivo does a great job of making sure he gets that person to me so that we can go on this mission. And so I really liked the fact that she is similar to a lot of other sci-fi leading ladies in, say, like Firefly or Farscape or, you know, even Star Wars. And I joked a little bit, but even something like Spaceballs, it kind of combines a little bit of that elegance and aristocratic nature with, like, a little bit of badassery, I guess. Like, she participates in the fights and actually... and you kind of see it in the costuming. She goes from being very proper to being a little bit more like what you would think of steampunk. So it was pretty cool.
Okay, so David, you're going to have you've had the screenings, been to the festival and so forth, but I understand you've got a very special, actually two showings very next month in mid-August in Maryland.
So in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania,
yeah. Oh, Gettysburg.
Which is on – right. So it's very close to the southern border where it connects with Maryland. And so August 13th through the 15th, Gettysburg is the host for Key City Steampunk. And so you mentioned about Doc Stone and a couple of the other previous guests. They're actually running this affair. And since so many of the steampunk community – on the front end, we connected with, and they are they actually came in and participated in the project. And so we brought them in. They were part of the cast and the crew, and the idea was in the years to come, we would actually show at a future steampunk convention, and here we are now. So RC Theaters is right next to the Wyndham, and we'll be showing our Pennsylvania premiere on Saturday the 14th, a matinee showing.
Okay, that's fantastic. And a lot of great people there. Tony Ballard, Smoot, Tobias, all kinds of cool people there. And I think that's going to be a fantastic event for you. And at least it'll be close to home for most people, right?
Yeah, so yeah. Austin is from Gettysburg, so that works out very well for him.
Yeah, no, I was blown away because that was like my childhood theater. So I was like, oh, my goodness, I'm going to see my face on my childhood theater screen.
Oh, that's like a movie scene right there. Oh,
it was. It was very romantic. Yeah.
Oh. And then after that, when is the distribution for, say, the rest of us?
So we're still in about a dozen more film festivals for consideration, and I'm in talks with two other festivals around the nation for getting included, steampunk festivals. And so talking about Florida, talking about Missouri, and so a couple more of those. But the biggest thing is we are working with a distribution company, and we're about halfway through the process for them to be in a position to distribute the movie by the Christmas time frame. So we're talking about potentially DVDs, potentially video on demand, international distribution, some of the other platforms, whether it's like a maybe a Redbox based on the desire or appetite for it, but any number of potential avenues. So that should be by Christmas. So far, since we first started this in 2018, we've been able to deliver on every single thing that we said we would deliver on. And so this is just the last of like 1,000 promises along the way. So, you know, we're confident that it'll be out there in some manner for public consumption in the near future.
Yeah, a feat in itself that you could deliver. I am just so excited for you guys. And by the way, and of course, all of you, you know, I know that in something like the arts, you really have to have a support system around you or people to encourage you. David, I am so glad that you married the woman you married.
Yeah, it reminds me every day how lucky I am.
That's what she told me. Okay, let's see, Zigzag. Claiborne has another question. Is there a treatment for movie two? Because you mentioned a sequel possibility or cliffhanger. It's going to be a cliffhanger at the end of this.
So we've always placed cliffhangers in all of our movies. But the truth in lending is that this is our fourth feature film, and we've never been in the same place to do a sequel. We haven't done a sequel yet. And so, you know, the reality is if there was the opportunity to get back to Pennsylvania, if there was a budget based on the success of the first one, you know, I wouldn't totally rule it out. But the odds are that the cliffhanger, it would lead to the eye in the beholder, to how everything would pan out. But I'll tell you, the way that the ending is, it definitely leaves a whole world of possibility there.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I don't know about you guys, but I just want to see, you know, Suji Cruz reprise her role 6 or 7 times. Just a whole entire, you know, what do you call that, like a quadrilogy? Or four, like 6 of them? I don't know, like a sextuplet? I want to see 6 of these.
Hey, I will tell you that the only thing in the equation that isn't there is me. So everything else is already in position where you could all just totally just you know, talk to me beforehand so I can give you the legal rights and let's do this straight, Austin.
I want her to be like the way Freddy Krueger was in the '80s.
Help me.
Oh, geez.
Too.
How is that?
Steampunk Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, well, like, you know how he had like 6 films? I just wanted to keep coming back, you know?
Okay.
Secret within the skull.
Yeah.
Secret within the Publix. You know, everything could be there.
Secret within the Publix, yeah.
Within the Walmart. Who knows?
What's in this box of cereal?
I'm not going to be happy until I see like trinkets at the store with Adeline.
Oh, Adeline,
what should you all of you in, what would you rather have first? Okay, you brought this up, Austin, so what would you rather see first, you and Suji, and probably your fellow actors?
I'm sorry,
could
you say that again?
You actors, and you're responsible for this question, Austin, because you put the idea in my mind. You see, if there were going to be trinkets, the first thing, would you rather the first thing be an action figure or a bobblehead?
Oh, my action figure. Yeah,
Funko.
Just like in Spaceballs where
Funko.
Darth Helmet's playing with the... What?
Funko.
Funko.
Oh, Funko Pops.
I want a Funko.
Oh, okay. Or, let's see. And then I think you really know you're there when people are... When kids dress like you for Halloween, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Or cosplay, yeah.
I was going to say, the costumes are amazing. The costumes did turn out to be fantastic. So I don't think the steampunk community will be saddened to see how those kind of came together. So.
Okay, good. So
you know, all the elements are there. The elements are there. The only thing missing is me. So you don't need me to hold you back.
Go ahead. Have your public community. And have your 30-hour days and just create to your heart's desire. I look forward to seeing it. Go blossom, my children. Be free.
Okay, so, all right. And also, I'll let you know when the day comes, although you may know before me, when I'm able to get my corgi a Duchess Adeline costume for Halloween. So that will be...
That would be amazing. Yeah. You have to tell me if you go with her or her more proper Duchess costume or if you go with more of the war costume.
Oh, I will. I had a corgi before that entered a pageant, and she had a sparkly outfit. She had a little cowgirl outfit and a hat.
Oh, that's amazing.
And that's a story in itself, let me tell you. So... I'll tell you the whole story sometime, guys, if you want to hear it. But it ends up the end line of the story is if something, because I almost choked to death, and I said, "Can I imagine my Bible thumping mother hearing that I died on a Sunday afternoon in a lesbian bar wearing a tank top and no bra? Because hey, I turned total stage mom, you know, pageant mom at the time, choking on wine with my dog dressed like Dale Evans." Okay. So anyway, that's the plot of it all.
Hey, we've all been there. You know. There's no reason to feel weird. Yeah, we've all been there.
That's Austin Saturday night. I don't know.
Yeah. Every weekend I could die like that.
Oh, my God. And
I've heard things of George, too. I don't know.
I'm just kidding, George. He was a friend of mine who was a gorgeous woman. MC
is
tall.
I'll film it and put it up.
Okay. So the MC was a tall, beautiful woman named Lauren, who was a friend of mine, and she was going through sex change surgery at the time, sexual gender reassignment surgery. And I remember she said, when people gave her, you know, like they did cash tips to drag queens, she said, "Just $10,000 more, and that Teflon beep is mine, all mine." So,
what kind of genie bottle did I walk into?
Listen, guys, you are all absolutely delightful. I owe Wheeler Stone and his beautiful wife a bunch of love for sending you here. David, I was so happy to get your email and so glad to have you all here. I'm so excited about this movie already, before meeting you, and I think everybody will be. Everybody's having a good time on this one, and I just want you all to come back. We'll make it a pajama party.
Yeah.
Good?
Absolutely.
I sleep in my underwear.
That.
No one wants to hear about your personal choice.
Just keep it clean. Hey,
keep it clean.
The other story will be my first drumming gig was playing for people who were naked. Okay, they were at a retreat to learn how to do the wild thing better. It took a whole weekend for them to learn techniques, and then we were coming in just after the end of the massage session, and they were waking up. Now, I'm not saying they were all naked. Some people had, like, maybe a scarf around their neck or something, but other than that, and some jewelry, but other than that, and only
the scarf is a good touch.
Well, they're trying to make it into a cape, actually, but yeah, got it. So, hey, I would be happy for you to all come back and hang out anytime. I think you are fabulous, and we will all be looking for Secret Within the Sphere. From Noble Park Productions. And I will be sharing information on this on all of my social media as Madame Perry Salon, or also as, or and also as Jennifer Perry. And thank you all so much. I'm going to end you with my song. Everybody's Got to Swing. And I think you are all fabulous. So come back. Next week we've got Soraya Rock. Rock. Going on with Soraya Rock next week. I love it.